We welcome you to the Tape Ministry of Denton Bible Church. The speaker today is the senior pastor, Tom Nelson.
Let's look at the Song of Solomon, chapter 5 and chapter 6. While you're finding the text, you ladies make a note. October 25th and 26th, we have a Denton Bible Men's Conference. Get your husband there that we might fix him, rebuke him, and scold him diligently. And work on him. Men need male fellowship, and we have men's conferences simply because all you guys out there, there's no way that we can get to know you. There's too many of you. We're too short-lived here in this sanctuary on a Sunday morning, so we have men's conferences, and we just get away at Camp Copus. Doesn't cost a bunch of money, maybe 30 bucks, something like that, and we stay a Friday and a Saturday. We got a great speaker coming. Me. I ain't that good, but my honorarium's great. It's a zero, so I work for freebies for my own fellowship here. And we're just going to have a time of getting together and doing some training, looking at all areas of the Christian life. We'll have a football out there, and so you guys can show off the moves you had at Dallas Kimball 1964. All right. But make a note, October 25th, 26th, we'll be signing you up in the next few weeks. You come to that men's conference. We're looking at chapter 5 and 6 of the Song of Solomon. Let me preface the text by telling you and all of you could come up and share a story like this if you're a married couple. October of, I think it was October 1981, did a wedding in Oklahoma City. My wife and I were there. Finished the wedding, spent the night there. My wife and I were in a motel, got ready to leave the next morning, go from Oklahoma City back to where my wife's folks were around Marshall, about a four-hour drive. As we got ready to leave that morning, I decided I'd get up and take a run. So I put my shirt and shorts on, took off running. Off down the access road, come on back, and I'm all sweaty and it's hot. And I take my shirt off and it's dripping wet. Take these shorts off, they're dripping wet. And I throw them in what I thought was a dirty clothes bag. I throw them in his paper sack. And it just turned out that's where Teresa had this dress she was making. And she had it folded up. Why do you make a dress and put it in a paper sack? I don't know, but I threw my stuff in there. And as soon as it went and hit this wet stuff on her material, she turned and in just a quick rush of emotion, hit me with an open hand shiver right here in the small of my back. Bam, just like that. And don't do that. And hit me and boy, it hurt. It went smack right on my back. And I turned, pushed beyond my limit now. I turned and said, cut it out. I said it kind of loud. All right. You could have heard it maybe on Mingo over here. Cut it out because it hurt. And as soon as we said that, we knew we had trouble. She felt she was wronged. I felt I was wrong. Her pride was on top. My pride was on top. Our feelings were hurt. I felt she had dishonored me. She felt I'd been disrespectful to her. We got in our car and we drove from Oklahoma City 4 hours, and outside of Texarkana, we were silent for 4 hours. After I'd done this marriage on love, honoring, and cherishing, and we drove in 4 hours of silence, and there was tension between my mate and I, and finally it just got so awful that we broke down, and one of us said, I'm sorry, and the other one said, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have yelled, and I shouldn't have hit, and I shouldn't have thrown my stuff in there, we're all right. And you know what? I'll bet you that I could have any couple here get up and tell an Oklahoma City story. You got your own, don't you? Of a real good row that you have had where you got your feelings hurt. The fact is, we all know that good couples have conflicts, don't they? Because you're marrying damaged goods. There's no such thing. The only kind of couples who don't have conflict in their marriage, dead couples don't have conflict. All right? No problem. Another kind of couple that does not have conflict, if you get one of the couples that has pummeled and beaten down the other one so badly through verbal or physical abuse, the other one will just roll over like a dog and give you its neck and won't open its mouth. Now, that you don't have conflict there. But that's worse. That's worse. Because someday that person will go off on you. The other kind of conflict is when you have a couple that has just gone their own separate ways. They don't have any fellowship. They have no intimacy. They share a bed, a bathroom, a kitchen, and a mailbox. He has his job career. She has hers, and they just meet together. That's worse right there. The difference between a good couple and a bad couple is one fights clean and one fights dirty. You got to know how to fight. The Bible gives you a lot of information on how to fight, how to defuse very quickly conflicts. Would you think that in a book as racy and as passionate as the Song of Solomon in 8 chapters, do you think we're going to see this couple fight? You're going to get 2 chapters on how to fight. You get 1 on how to have physical intimacy. You get 1 on how to court. You get 2 on how to fight clean. 25% of the book is over fighting, because that's usually about what 25% of our marriage is sometimes. It's butting heads. How to fight clean. Watch this. You're only going to have to remember 2 things. We're going to watch this couple have a fight. You ready? Verse 2. She says, I was asleep. Chapter 5, verse 2. My heart, meaning Solomon, was awake. She goes to bed first. A lot of couples, you kind of change off who goes to bed first. Husband's been working late. He's working after hours. And she goes to bed. Now in verse 2, a voice. My beloved was knocking. He says, open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one. What do you think this brother's thinking about? All right. Whenever a man comes to your bedroom door, ladies, and that husband of yours knocks at the door and he says, sweetheart, baby doll, sugar plum, dumpling. He didn't want to talk about the checkbook, see. This guy's been working late and he says, my head is drenched with dew, my locks were the damp of the night, I've been working hard. And that's what sex is in a marriage. It is an oasis. When you've been pushed and bullied and hurt by the world and you're working by the world, when I come home at night and lock the bedroom door, turn out the lights, man, I'm in Eden. I'm in paradise. There's somebody who loves me I can be vulnerable with. They're going to treat me tenderly, and oh, boy, it's wonderful. And so he is looking for his oasis. Now, don't look at the text. How many of you want to guess what this woman's going to do? This is the woman that in chapter 1 said, you are like sweetness. She said in chapter 2, let his left hand be under my head, his right hand embrace me. Chapter 3, she said, come to the hills of Bether, you young stag. Remember that? She said in chapter 4, awake, north wind, come wind of the south, make my garden breathe. Now, what do you think she's going to do? How many of you think this guy is going to say to his wife, I need some intimacy? How many of you think you're going to see the raciest, most passionate, sensual text you have ever seen in your life? Let's watch. All right. Verse 3, here's what this woman says. She is alive with passion. She says, I've taken off my dress. How can I put it on again? I have washed my feet. How can I dirty them again? Which means in Hebrew, I got a headache. That's exactly what that means. She is self-centered. She is self-willed. She is egocentric. She is not concerned about him. This guy has a physical right, sexual right, masculine right. He has a domestic right to be ministered to by his wife. And she says, I've already gotten in bed and my hair is in rollers and I've already taken a bath. My feet are clean. You want me to wash me? And good night. It must be 15 feet from the bed to the door and you're asking me to open it up. Don't look at the text. We got a conflict here, don't we? We got a serious conflict. One of the mates has sinned against the other one. How many of you want to speculate what Solomon's going to do? This is the guy who's a king that took this wife as a migrant worker who was working in the fields and made her his dove, his perfect one, his unique one. How many of you think he's going to kick her smooth out of the castle? What did you ever see the movie Quiet Man? My favorite movie. Ever see Quiet Man? Maureen O'Hara, John Wayne? What did John Wayne do whenever Maureen O'Hara, on their honeymoon night, slammed the door and hit the deadbolt? Click! What did the Duke do? I'll tell you what the Duke did. The Duke kicked down that door. And the Duke came in and he grabbed Maureen O'Hara. He said, there'll be no bolts and bars in our marriage except on your mercenary little heart. That's what he said. Then he grabbed her and threw her in the bed. Bed broke down. Yeah, that's the way you do it, wife. Now, how many of you think that Solomon is going to do it? You don't do the Duke like that, and you don't do Solomon like that. Right? We got a conflict. Let's look at the first principle of how you conflict. Notice in verse 4, my beloved extended his hand through the opening, and my feelings were aroused. I rose to open my beloved. My hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the bolt. This man, notice guys, when he is turned down by his wife sexually, what he does? You don't push it. You don't go quote in 1 Corinthians 7:3, let the wife fulfill her duty to her husband and the husband to his wife. The wife doesn't have authority over her own body, but she's mine. All right? That verse is for your wives to obey. It is not yours to quote. You don't quote it. What he does do, and I don't know how this door is put together, but he will not open that door. Incidentally, what New Testament verse comes from this? I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears the my voice and opens the door, I'll come into him. Jesus will not push his way in. This man will go no further than his wife lets him. And so he puts his hand. He'll honor that bolt. Apparently they have separate bedrooms that they as they did at this time. He puts his hand through an opening, and on the bolt of the door that keeps his fellowship from her, he puts liquid myrrh. It's a calling card of sweetness. The very thing, that bolt that bars him from fellowship, that sins against him, he covers it with love. What do you do to defuse conflict in your home? Number one, you do not react to your mate. You respond to God. Solomon, how does your flesh feel? Angry. Solomon, how would a million other males act? Angry. Solomon, what's the consensus? Anger. How are you going to act? Loving. Why? Because my mate and my flesh and the consensus do not control my behavior. It is not my wife who is my Lord. It's not my flesh who is my Lord. It's not the consensus who is my Lord. Who is our Lord? God. How does he tell me to treat my wife? Live with her in an understanding ways with a weaker vessel. Grant her honor as a fellow heir in the grace of life. Love your wives. Don't be embittered against them. Love them as Christ does the church. Nourish, cherish her. How does God tell me to do? I'm going to love her and forgive her and treat her tenderly. See, that's the first thing about marriage you've got to deal with. There is no place in the Bible, married person, that tells you you've got to change your mate. Not one place that tells you to change your mate. And here's what happens to couples. They get married, and I'll start on the left, and here's the way they move. They've got expectations and rights. Those expectations are met with disappointment, and they try to manipulate. I'll yell at her, I'll criticize her, I'll tell him he's just like his mother, I'll cut him off sexually, I won't cook for him, I won't do this for him. That's the way we do, don't we? We try to manipulate. Does manipulation work? The harder the wind blows, what do? You tighten your cap and you pull your shawl. The harder the manipulation is, the tighter we get. And that produces greater frustration and bitterness, and that produces greater estrangement. I don't know why we think that criticism, guilt, anger, and yelling change people. It doesn't work in business. It doesn't work with your next-door neighbor. It doesn't work anywhere else. Why do we think that it will in the home? But we think it will. If I yell at her enough, she'll love me. It don't work. You're never told to change your mate. You're merely told to obey God. And that is the most freeing concept there is in marriage. That I am told to love my wife, period. But and you get couples that come in and they're angry, and they come in basically pointing at each other, change my mate, change your mate. And I tell them right up front, your major problem in your marriage is why you're here. You're wanting me to change your mate. Your job is to obey God and let God change your mate. It's like boxers. You line up in a boxer across from each other, they counterpunch. You know that if you see a left jab coming at you from over here, a left jab countered by a right hook. So if you see a left jab, boom, you just react to it. If you see an overhand right lead, you're open over here. You do a left hook. And see, that's the way couples come. He's so mean, she's so ugly. She's her daddy, her mother, and they're just, you're fat, you're stupid, and they're just coming like this. And they come for counseling. You know what they're doing at counseling? They're saying, excuse me, would you hold my mate while I hit him? You hold him, and I'll hit him. And I say, we ain't going to do that, because your whole framework is wrong. You react. Your conduct is mirroring your mate. What does the Bible say you should do to your enemy? If your enemy's hungry, do what? Feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. Because what happens? You heap burning coals on his head. He senses his guilt. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. When Jesus was reviled, what did he do? 1 Peter 2. He didn't revile in return. When he was suffering, what did he do? He uttered no threats. But he entrusted himself to him who judges righteously. First thing in marriage, some of you right now, you have an estrangement from your mate because you've tried for years and years to change them because you had expectations. They had to live a certain way, and you've tried to be the carpenter. You've tried to be the Holy Spirit. You've tried to be God and can't do it. You can't do it. You're to treat them like God treated you. Give a blessing instead because you were called for the purpose to inherit a blessing. Solomon, why can you love this woman? Because there have been times, Solomon says, that I didn't clothe myself with righteousness toward God and I wouldn't wash my feet of sin. And I treat God like he has treated me. And that's gracious. You respond, you don't react. It's a faith reaction in marriage. Now, let's don't look at the text. Obviously, if Solomon treats her with love what's going to happen? Obviously, he's going to be taken advantage of, right? Because whenever you treat a mate with love, when they harm you, you always get misdone. How many of you believe the rest of the text is going to show what a stupid thing it is to trust God with your mate? Look what happens. When you trust your mate to God, two things happen. You see one of them in verse 4. My feelings were aroused. 5, I arose to open to my beloved. And she sought him. You see, when your mate is nasty towards you, and you respond with a hook and a cross, how do they feel? Do they feel like, I ought to dislike you, you son of a gun. Because look at how you treated me. I'm so glad I threw that chair. I wish I'd have thrown the stove. That's the way they feel. But when you're nice to them, when you're nice to your mate and kind to your mate, you heap burning coals upon their head. And I've said to couples, can you love them like a mate? No. Can you love them like a friend? No. Can you love them like a brother? No. Can you love them like an enemy? How do you love an enemy? You treat them with graciousness and heap burning coals, and they sense how bad they've been. There's time when I offend my wife, and my wife comes to me, and she just puts her arms around me. She says, baby, I love you, and I want you to know I love you, and I'm just going to let God deal with you. Hit me, babe. Do something. Don't do that. As a matter of fact, little insight, whenever a couple's going through a divorce, you'll always find, and I'm going to say always, the offending party that's more in the offense, that's running the mate off or leaving, they'll try to intimidate the other one into anger and retribution because it feels better. You always feel better hating a hateful person. So Solomon's nice. And you know what, guys? It makes your wife say, what a loving guy. It makes a guy say, man, what a jerk I am. I have never, ladies, heard of a man boast about the acid tongue of his wife. It never makes her love you anymore. I've never heard a man say, boy, you think your wife has an acid tongue? Listen to this. My wife called me a egg-sucking, yellow dog. You think that's bad? Listen to this. You don't boast about that. You're ashamed of it. Guys, no woman has ever come to me boasting about the violence and the anger of her husband. You think your husband's angry? Listen to this. I'm so proud of him. See that scar right there? He hit me with this. No, whenever you respond in anger, it just drives your mate farther off. But do you know when a mate starts boasting about the holiness and the winsomeness of his mate? Whenever I start telling stories about how I've offended Teresa and how she's been gentle with me, it makes me love her so much more. And this woman responds to him in arousal because she has a godly mate. Conflict's a way for you to prove yourself and to deepen your marriage. Now, if Solomon doesn't discipline that mate, which he doesn't, who's going to have to discipline her now? If God doesn't do something, justice goes skirted. Do you think the rest of this text has got to tell us something about what God does to the offending mate whenever the other mate will not take offense? Watch this. She says in verse 6, I searched for him, I called for him, and didn't answer me. Verse 7, the watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me and struck me and wounded me and took the shawl away from me. Yay! There's justice. See, we think that if I don't act in response, that the guy's going to get away and nothing's going to happen. God personally took it upon himself to discipline this mate. Now, don't you guys try to apply this by saying, all right, sweetheart, no intimacy, that's all right, don't go out tonight. You're going to get worked over. You see, what this simply means is, however, whenever I don't take retribution, God will personally take it upon himself to correct my mate. Now, what this says, ladies, is this. When your marriage is not right with your husband, you can't expect any blessing outside of your home. And you can't. I have that from a good source, and that's my wife. And she has said to me, whenever I know that I am not kind and loving towards you, no area of the rest of my life is fulfilling. You know what 1 Peter 3:7 says, guys, about us? It says this: husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel. Grant her honor as a fellow heir in the grace of life, in order that, what does it say? Your prayers may not be hindered. God does not listen to the prayers of a godless man. And when a husband is wicked toward his wife, he is rendered godless and there is no blessing on the rest of his life. God, fellas, I want to say to you on the basis of the New Testament, if you're not right with your wife and if you're treating your wife in an unkind way, you can forget your business being fulfilling. You can forget your friendships. You can forget all of whatever you're engaged in. If you're a Christian and you're not right in your home, 1 Peter 3:7 says, you have the curse of God upon the rest of your life. What does 1 Timothy 3 say about who gets to be an elder? If any man will not manage his household, how can he take care of the church of God? Paul tells Timothy, if a guy's family is not right, you cut him off right there from any other spiritual ability. I tell my staff, and I've told my elders, and I say to myself, fellas, if you get to where your marriage is shaky, you stop everything. You take time off, you get with your wife, and if ever we find out that you're playing a game of playing elder or playing staff and your marriage isn't right, I'm going to stop you and I'm going to force you to a sabbatical. We're going to get your marriage right. You know why? It's a selfish reason. It's not because I'm so holy, because I know that if Keith Chancey's not treating Karen right, that youth ministry's not going to prosper. And I know that if Jim McDonald is not treating Chris right, his role as an elder in EE is not going to prosper. God will not bless EE that Jim McDonald teaches if he can't do his wife right. And what that means, ladies from Song of Solomon 5, guys from 1 Peter 3, now listen to me. Say it to you as a pastor and as a shepherd. If you've been coming to Denton Bible listening to the Word of God, and God has convicted you about a harshness and a criticalness and a lack of intimacy in your marriage, if you're not committed to get your marriage right, you got to stop right here. And you can't go on. You can't skirt this issue, guys, and expect to go on and deal in ministry and deal in witnessing and deal with your business. If you're a Christian, you got to stop right here. And I'll be honest with you, don't come back to church if you're not willing to get your marriage right. There's no use you sitting in this church and learning more about the Bible when God can't bless you in any way. Stay home. You stay home with your mate and you get your life right before you come back here to church, because all you're going to get is more material that you're going to disobey. You stay home and get it right. You got to stop right now and deal with your marriage. Okay? So, God takes it upon Himself to deal with the mate that is out of fellowship. Now, couples, if you've got trouble in your marriage and you wives are responding as a dripping faucet and you husbands are responding in anger, God can't deal with your mate. Because if He does, now He's got to support and certify your anger and vengeance. He can't discipline because you've tried to discipline. You get out of the way and let God deal with your mate. I found out that He does such a better job with my wife than I do, because He deals with mercy and restoration. All I do is just carry on. Look what this woman felt toward her husband. Verse 9, what kind of beloved is your beloved, O most beautiful among women? What kind of beloved is your beloved that you adjure us? And in verse 10 through verse 16, just scan the text. She starts with his head, goes all the way to his feet, and she says he is noble and outstanding and handsome and sweet and kind and gentle and precious and solid and wonderful. Why? Because her husband showed through conflict the depth and the maturity of his love. And that's the most gracious and wonderful thing there is. How do you know that Jesus Christ is a wonderful, kind, forgiving, loving, marvelous bridegroom to you? I'll tell you how you know. Because when sin increases, what happens? Grace abounds. How do you know that your mate is so gentle and wonderful? Because God lets you have conflict. It developed Solomon. It brought them closer. Here's the next point about conflict. The art of forgiveness. Chapter 6, verse 1. Where has your beloved gone, most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him? Obviously, this guy's had an anger fit. And what do a lot of couples do when they get angry? They stomp off. The guy gets in the car and roars off and goes down to the bar. The girl goes home to mama. No, she says, I know where my mate is. 6 verse 2, he's down at the garden in the beds of balsam, that's sweetness, to pasture his flocks, that's gentleness, and gather lilies, that's beauty. She says, my husband's not mad, he's not taking action, he's down pasturing his flock. He's so kind. She knows where to find him because nothing's changed. He's forgiving. And let me show you what forgiveness is based on. Verse 3, she says, I am my beloved's and he is mine. Woman, how do you know your husband is down in that valley of balsam, gathering lilies, shepherding the flock? How do you know he's so forgiving? Answer, because I'm my beloved's and he is mine. His forgiveness is based upon his marital covenant. He made a promise. We had a marriage, we got together, we had a honeymoon, we had sex, and we became one. And he came into his garden, gathered his honey, his comb, his balsam, and I became one flesh. And I'm my beloved's and he is mine. And I know we're going to work through this marriage. My wife and I sometimes bump like this. I never worry about us not reconciling it. You know why? Because on August 23rd, 1974, we got married. And we have on the inside of our rings, 1 John 4:19, we love because he first loved us. And I know that I made a commitment to her. When I go play softball and my right arm doesn't throw a ball right, I don't cut it off because it's my body. When I go jogging and my knee hurts me, I don't cut it off because it's my body. My wife is my beloved and she's mine. And I am going to make it work. And she is too because we're committed to it. That's why you can't get married if you have a back door open, can you? And incidentally, if the shoe fits here, wear it. That's why you don't live together. Because you have a back door open. This couple did not live together. They had a marital ceremony and they made an open commitment before God and they slammed the door on divorce. Well, time we love each other, we're just going to stick together. Hey, I wasn't born in a pulpit. All right? I know what you're thinking. There's a back door open until you put it on paper like the Bible guys do it. If you don't, Jesus, the first thing he honored in his ministry was a wedding. John 2. You don't live together. You leave a back door open. So this couple, our forgiveness for each other is based upon our commitment. I'm committed to this woman. Another thing is verse 3. He who pastures his flock among the lilies, meaning he is so gentle. I know where my husband is because he's my husband and he's gentle. He's so kind and he's so loving. His hands are like rods of gold. Whenever my wife and I have a conflict, I know she's not going to run off on me because she's got a track record of treating me with gentleness. In 17 years, my wife has never once been abusive to me with her tongue. Do you know that? Teresa has never hurt me with her tongue. Open hand smash on one occasion. But never with her tongue. And so I'm not worried. Guys, can your wife say that about you? That she knows whenever you have a conflict that she doesn't get nervous about the response because she's watched you for years and she knows. My husband is so gentle, he's so kind, he's so tender. The word kind comes from the word kin. That means your family. Kindness is literally kinness. The way you treat your family with love. So forgiveness is based upon our commitment, based upon our kindness. In verse 4, it is assuring. He says in verse 4, he steps out and he says, you're as beautiful as Tirzah. Tirzah is the Miami Beach of Israel. He says, you're beautiful. He says, you're as lovely as Jerusalem. What did Jerusalem represent? The holy place. He said, sweetheart, I don't think any less of you. I'm not going to turn to you and say, well, you sinned against me. I'll go ahead and forgive you, but you better get out of that Bible study fellowship, carnal woman. You better get out of your precept study. Well, you better drop out of 2-7, you hypocrite. He says, sweetheart, you're as lovely as the holy place of Israel. I love this. He says, you're as awesome as an army with banner. It's like looking at the third army on parade. That's so respectful and so powerful. He says, sweetheart, I respect you so greatly. You see, sometimes we forgive, but we still kind of hold it against that mate. You're not as beautiful, you're not as holy, and I'm not as respectful. This guy says, you are Tirzah, you are Jerusalem, and you're the third army. He gives an assurance to his mate. Verse 5, another thing about forgiveness, it's non-manipulative. He says, turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me. You know what that means? On their honeymoon night, you remember what he said? You make my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride, with a single glance of your eyes. He says, I look at your eyes on our honeymoon, and it gets me physically excited. Now, this woman comes to him for forgiveness. I'm sure she puts her arms around him, pulls up close to him. He starts feeling his heart race, and he looks into her eyes and he says, "Turn your eyes away, because I'm getting excited." You know what he's saying to her? "I am not going to have you think that I'm forgiving to you so I can get sex. There's no price tag on my forgiveness." We do that, don't we? We think that we're ministering to each other, but we're not ministering. We're manipulating you. "I'm going to give you a candlelight dinner, but there's a hidden agenda. I'm going to send you flowers, but I expect an exciting night." This guy says, "Babe, I don't want you to think that I'm going to love you so I can get what I want. There's no price tag." That's manipulation. That's prostitution. I love this. It's, watch this. "Your hair is like a flock of goats. They've descended from Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of ewes which have come down." Verse 8 or verse 7, "Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate." Where have you heard those before? Remember that last week? Their honeymoon? "Your hair is like a flock of goats coming from Gilead. Your teeth are like ewes, newly shorn, coming up from the washing. Not one is missing. Your cheeks are like pomegranate." Why does he repeat their marital love? Because he lets her know, "Sugar, I love you just like I loved you on my honeymoon night. My love is totally forgiving. I don't hold any account of wrong suffered." That's the next aspect of forgiveness. It's not only not manipulative, it is reconciliatory. He's bringing her back to where it was. You want a great quote? Heard a guy once say, he said, "My wife gets mad at me and she becomes historical." Did you catch that? She gets mad and becomes historical, meaning, "I'll forgive you because your mother once said, I remember back in 1976, you did that again." Love doesn't hold into account a wrong suffered. 1 Corinthians 13. You know what the word account means in Greek? Logizomai. Logos means a word. To hold into account means that you speak about it. You don't speak about the things that you did. You don't speak about the things that hurt your mate. It's done. It's finished. What does God do with your sin? Puts him as the east is from the west, the bottom of the sea, and behind his back. It's done. Forgiveness. Something else about forgiveness. Look at how it reconciles. He says in verse 8, "There's 60 queens and 80 concubines, maidens without number," meaning I've got about 130 subs back here, sweetheart. And Solomon did. He didn't do right because he had a bunch of wives and concubines and baby makers, but he let her know, "I've got a whole bunch of second teamers." But you know what? Verse 9, "You are my perfect one, unique, my mother, the mother's only daughter, pure child of the one who bore her." Sweetheart, it's like you're the only woman. I don't relegate you in your place. I don't demote you. His love is not just conciliating. It is reconciliating. Now, hang on with me. Let me give you some theology. You know what the word reconcile means? Conciliate means that you're now on friendly terms. Reconcile means you're conciliated back to where you used to be. You're reconciliated. Like if Charlie and I right here, if I'm backing out in my car this morning and Charlie's out of control trying to get someplace, boom, he hits me. I get out, Charlie did me wrong, and I cuss him real good, and he feels bad, and I says, "Okay, Charlie, I'm going to forgive you. But just don't be coming around here anymore. And don't be talking to me. But I'm not going to press charges. I'm not going to take you to court." I'm conciliated, but I am not reconciliated. It's not back to our original relationship. Reconciliation means that I say, "Charlie," and I put my arms around him, "Buddy, don't even worry. Tom, I'll come over and fix it myself. Tom, Charlie, don't even worry. You're my buddy. You're my brother. That's all right. That's why I pay insurance. I love you just like you are." "Oh, Tom, I'm so terrible." "No, Charlie, I love you." He is reconciliated. The Greek word for reconcile in the New Testament, katalasso, lasso, means to change. Kata means change back. When God reconciled you, He didn't make you a lower class citizen. He made you a son of the Most High God and a daughter of the Most High God. He reconciled you back. Now, what if you have a worst case scenario? What if your husband's beating you? If your wife's cheating on you, if they're in this church, come see me. and we'll go fix that. But in most cases, you treat them in a loving, reconciling way. And watch this. Verse 11. She says, I went down to the orchard of nut trees to see the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vine had budded or the pomegranates were bloomed. And before I was aware, my soul, meaning Solomon, my soul set me over the chariots of my noble people. He came racing by in his 57th chariot, took her, placed her in the chariot, and raced off with her to a weekend away, and he put her above the chariots of the noble people. He put her back higher than she had ever been before. He was reconciled to his wife. You're no less lovely than I first loved you. Man. Verse 13 is a sweet verse. The daughters of Jerusalem cry out, come back, O Shulamite, come back that we may gaze at you. Let me tell you why that's sweet. The Hebrew word Solomon is pronounced Shulam. When they call her the Shulamite, that's her title. It's the female side of Solomon. By his being reconciled with her, they saw, those people saw their love as so intimate that they called him Shulam and her Shulamite. It would be like saying to a couple who rides off, there goes Joe and Josephine. There goes Henry and Henrietta. There goes Thomas and Thomasina. There goes Leroy and Leroyona. All right? Is that a... I'm not sure if that's a name. And it just simply means... Here's Dean and Barbara right here, and I know this is Dean and I know this is Barbara, but if all of a sudden I saw such an intimacy and a love among them, I'd put my arm around them and I said, oh, this is Dean and Dinero, or this is Dean and Deanette right here. They're so close, and that's the way that we become one with the Lord, because He's called who? Jesus who? Christ. And what are we called? Christian. That's our love. We're one with Him, bridegroom and bride. And that's what conflict does. Whenever you forgive each other, go back to the marital covenant, you're tender, you're forgiving, you're reconciling, you're assuring, you're non-historical. It just makes you so in love. That's the way you get close, is by conflict. And he says to the daughters of Jerusalem, why should you gaze at the Shulamite as at the dance of two companies? You know why you would have a dance of two companies? If you were going to a marital feast. And that's the way their conflict ends, in happiness, in joy, and a second honeymoon. They're on their way to the Sheraton, and he is exalting her higher than she's ever been. Where sin increases, grace abounds. How are you going to get close to your mate? How is God going to let you get close to your mate? I'll show you how. He's going to let you conflict and have to trust God and love to learn to love each other as God loves you. How to forgive, how to forget, how to reconcile. How to go back to your marital covenant. How do you fight clean, Denton Bimal? Do you know? Number one, you respond to God. You don't react to your mate. Number two, you forgive like God forgave you. Someday, our Shepherd King is going to come get us, isn't he? And he's going to put us in the chariot and he's going to take us away. And the Christ is going to become one with the Christian. And we're going to be forever with Him in the dance of two companies. In the marriage feast of the Lamb forever and forever. And you know why? Because we sinned against Him. And you know what was the wage of our sin? A cross. Death. That was our barring way from God. We sinned. And you know what God put on that cross? He put myrrh on the bolt. He put the shed blood of His own Son and He dripped it all over that cross that we barred our fellowship from Him. God took my cross and He smeared it with the blood of Christ. And He let me know that He is a kind and a wonderful God, and that drew me to love Him. And He forgave me. He made a covenant with me. He's been kind with me. He's been reconciliatory with me, assured with me. And He exalts me to His very right hand, and someday we're going to go dance. That's how God loves me. Now, do you think I can't love my mate? Give a blessing instead, because you have been called to inherit a blessing. 1 Peter 3. While being reviled, he didn't revile. While suffering, he utters no threats, but entrusts himself to Him who judges righteously. Let's pray. Father in heaven, all of us wanted to get deeper with our mates. All of us wanted to become more intimate with our mates. All of us wanted to become more gentle with our mates. We got married and we wanted to deepen our relationship with our mates, and we didn't realize how you were going to do it. We wanted this perfect person that we could pour out and receive and take from them and take from them, this person who would always treat us a certain way and always say a certain thing and always do a certain thing and always give a certain thing. And we found out different, that you let us marry some damaged goods. And you made us learn to love like you loved. And you have mates that you have given us to each other, and we sin against each other. That we can learn how to walk by faith with you, to deepen our walk with you, to learn how to respond to you. You have given us mates to where we have to learn what forgiveness is. Forgiveness that is based upon our marital covenant. Forgiveness to where we deal with each other with the hands of a shepherd. You've given us a marriage where we have to learn to forgive with a reassurance and an exaltation. To say you're as lovely and as pretty and as respectful as you've ever been. A forgiveness where we have to do it without any kind of manipulation, without any kind of hidden agenda. A forgiveness where we have to receive each other back, even as you received us. You made us sons and daughters of the Most High God. And I pray, Father, for all of us here, that no matter how we hurt each other, we would always know that I'll be there. Whenever the pain is, I'll be right there. And we pray this for Christ's sake. Amen. We're dismissed.